Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Dylan Nussbaum, NWT Tournament Angler, back on the show. Dylan is one of our favorites, just a hardworking young man that's doing a lot of good fishing out there. So a lot of great talkers in this conversation. We haven't talked to Dylan since last year. And last year, Dylan was one of the guys that was in the Heated Angler of the Year race there right to the end in the NWT, and he's already got a lot of great momentum early on in this tournament season. So we're going to get a full update and get some great details, a little bit of gear talk, just everything that we can cover in a short amount of time with Dylan. It's always a pleasure. It's always fun to talk to this guy. So let's get to it. We've got Dylan Nussbaum. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. I want to get some fishing updates from you and just kind of get up to speed on things, but I'm definitely kind of curious. I want to start this off a little bit going back, you know, to like recap last year in your off season a little bit, because there was a lot of fireworks. It was a really exciting year. I think we talked, did we talk after Sakakawea? I think that was a great tournament for you. How that whole year ended, you've had a bunch of time to reflect. I mean, you were already through the first stop of this year's schedule, and we'll get to that, But I even want to try to reflect or get sort of some of those updates on some of the big takeaways you maybe had last year, just how much fun it was, or just some of the things, you know, over the off season that you were thinking about that were kind of, you know, meaningful and motivating, or, you know, just the big takeaways and updates there, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, last year was, I mean, an amazing season. You really can't have much of a better season than that. I think average last year was like a 10th place average, so I mean, that's amazing to do on the National Walleye Tour. And, you know, last year I did learn a lot also. I mean, the biggest thing I kind of learned from last year was that I kind of just need to calm down and just fish the day and almost kind of like whatever happens, happens, but just keep your head down, fish hard, and it's just going to kind of work out. I mean, one of the really big things I did was kind of almost eliminated like all of the thought process of like what I think walleyes are going to do. Like, that sounds bad, but anytime we kind of like get on a good bite, like the first thing that comes to your head, where are these fish going to go? What are they going to do? Like, what's going to happen? And like last year, I just kind of eliminated all that. And kind of what I did was go into these spots, find fish, and just say, okay, I'm just going to come back tournament day and see if they're here. And that's kind of really what I did, and just kind of left it at that. And honestly, half the tournaments, I didn't even know what I was going to get into really, but I just had like a whole different process of going about it last year, and it worked really well. And I was really happy with how it all worked out. So going into this season, just going to keep that same mindset and just do the same thing. And I mean, just go at it hard. I mean, I was very happy to start out great with the season, and, you know, I'm just going to try to keep it on going. The Mississippi's up right now, and it's one of my favorite bodies of water to fish. So I'm excited to see what this season brings.
Yeah, the process, man. Those are the fun topics. You know, for me at least, you know, to just kind of hear, because the process is a little bit different for everybody. But what is it about your process that you just try to build off of, where you're just fishing the day and covering water and keeping all those memories sort of on the back burner and not, you know, short circuiting you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the biggest part of it is just trying not to spin out and trying to find a clue. The biggest thing is finding a clue on some of these bodies of water. Like, I know Huron last year was a really, really tough bite for a lot of guys. It was not easy at all. And it really just came down to like little clues and like finding pretty much the shallow bite, just finding that one spot and just being able to build on that. Like that was a huge thing. As soon as you find one thing, it just makes it so much easier. If you get to a place like Huron and you're not finding fish, you can go days without catching fish. And that just kind of starts to wear on you. And you just got to really keep your head in the game. And the other thing is you can't get set on certain clues also. Like, all right, hey, they're biting in the weeds really good. Like, this is the bite that's happening. It's like, no, there can be 100 different bites going on. And sometimes that does burn me to where I get stuck on a bite like that and I really need to branch out. Say I just keep hitting weed patches and just find a ton of weed patches. Well, then bites do kind of change a lot. So it's always better. It's always nice to find something, a deep water bite, a tree bite, anything, just something different to have kind of on the back burner in case that whole bite goes south. I mean, it happened at the championship at Devil's Lake 2 years ago. I mean, there was hundreds and hundreds of giant walleyes. I mean, just stacked in the weeds. And tournament day came around and it was a ghost town. I mean, they're gone. Like, you could not buy a fish in the weeds. And that was just one of them cases where, like, I put so much time and effort into that bite and I really should have been putting more time and effort into finding different bites, deeper water bites, and just different structure bites. So, I mean, the process, it changes for every single body to water, but you got to try to not get burnout and really pay attention to the clues for it all.
Yeah, and like Lake Sharp, you know, you had a solid finish there. So you're keeping the momentum going. Got to love that. But I talked to a few guys. I did a podcast with like Dusty Minky, and I thought it was so interesting, or it's been interesting to talk about that tournament with people, and that had to have been an interesting, you know, pre-fish and breakdown and like strategy session for everybody, you know, just because, gosh, you just hit like this really crazy timing where you had cold water on the top end, you know, of the reservoir where there was like potential for pre-spawn fish, and then you have fish that are way down south that, you know, some people were talking about there's maybe more of them or they're more bitey, but, you know, it's post-spawn fish and maybe, you know, maybe the potential for a big bite is less. Like, I'm sort of curious about your recap of like how that tournament went and what your process was like and just sort of how that tournament sort of builded and manifested itself into a solid finish for you.
Yeah, I mean, that tournament was a real tough one for me. Like, that one was not easy by any means. And going into the pre-fish, like, I was 100% set that down south, I was going to find giants, especially, like, around the trees. And there was big fish down there. But I spent so much time down there, like, probably way too much time down there. And there was actually days that I would drive all the way down to the dam, launch, fish for, like, half a day, and load the boat up, move up, go to another ramp, like just trying to figure this out. That was one tournament I started to get burnout. And then finally, like the last day of pre-fish, the last full day of pre-fish, I really kind of just like said, I need to calm down because I wasn't finding that bite that I really wanted. And I was kind of starting to realize, like, I don't think anyone was finding that bite. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the classic examples of getting burnout and starting to spin out for a tournament. And I just kind of salvaged it, said, hey, I need to just stay up from the dam down, stay within 5 miles of the boat ramp, really, because that's just them fish up there, they were a heavier fish. There was a lot of fish around. You had the chance of catching pre-spawners. I did catch a 26-incher, a big pre-spawn walleye right up on the shoreline. So it had potential up there, and that's just kind of what I locked into for the last day and a half of pre-fish, and found some areas and kind of figured out a really cool bite of casting jerk baits. The Rapala Maverick was actually the deep one, was the only one I threw the whole time. And I can't even take credit for figuring it out, because my partner, Ryan, he ended up figuring it out down in the main lake. And I ended up trying it in the river because it was super clear water and I couldn't catch them fish. And I don't know, it was one of them deals. Trying to get a reaction bite out of a fish, no matter when, what's going on. The water temps were 40 degrees, so it was cold, and getting a reaction bite out of them fish can be tough. And the jerkbait was just the perfect thing for it. And in the pre-fish, it was I think I caught two fish on it, honestly. But I could get them schools to rise up and come for it, and especially in the community spots. And, going into tournament day, I honestly had no idea what to think about it, and so it happens, it was the deal. I was able to get them fish to rise up, then fish had been beat up, get them to rise up, start chasing, and by no means was it easy, but you could definitely get the bigger fish to go like that. And it was just it was a really cool bite, and I just love talking about cool bites like that.
What were some of the keys to the operation as far as, fishing that cold, clear water?
Yeah, so one of the bites that I was doing was actually, just along the bluffs. And if anyone's a local there, they know what that is. It's literally right off from the ramp. It's no secret. It was just a bite that, you had a good chance of catching a nicer sized fish, and there was decent fish there. And kind of what I was doing with that was honestly just kind of spot locking and then start slipping the current. And I'd just have my trolling motor facing towards the shoreline, and I'd have the Garmin perspective mode going and forward also. But the perspective mode was kind of the big key for this, because them fish were so tight to bottom, it was really hard to mark them with the forward in the current. And the fish were so tight to bottom, it's just really difficult to use forward only. So when you have perspective going, you can see them little pods of fish. When you see them, you can anchor up, and almost I was kind of anchoring up just behind them so they would stay in the field of view of the perspective. And I could actually watch them fish start swimming up the current right there. I could see them swimming up the current, and I could pitch out to them. It's really difficult to gauge your length, your distances that way, but man, it works good. You could spot lock, pitch out to them, and catch them fish like that. I'd fish that pod, then basically just take it off a spot lock, start slipping back again until I see another pod, and just kept doing that process down through. It was pretty cool to see on the live scope.
A lot of times too, the other thing, comparatively, when we talk about, the classic Lake Erie tournaments or any of the Great Lakes type tournaments or, the big lake tournaments or whatever, where you're being really selective on the fish that you're even pitching at. But this seemed like one of those, at least a day one or how the whole pre-fish went, were you basically casting at every single pod of fish that looked like walleyes to you?
Yes. Up in the river, 100%. Now down south, that was where I was pretty selective. I could actually go through and live scope them and say, all right, that's a pretty big fish. I could pitch to that fish. But up in the river, no, it was, you could see the schools, you pitch to the schools, kind of just hope for a bigger fish. Now, with the jerkbait bite, I could definitely see bigger fish rise up, but there was only so much you could do, because you'd have five or six of them rise up at one time. And you just had to take what you could get. Whatever fish came up and grabbed it, that's just what you were getting. It was more of a, it definitely was not targeting a single fish for that tournament, but LiveScope played a heavy role in that jerkbait bite, 100%. Definitely. My co-angler, both of them, I give them credit, because they were in the back of the boat blind casting, and they were smoking keepers. I'm pretty sure both of them caught at least two fish that were boxed. Just blind casting jerk baits too. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, dude. I mean, fishing jerkbaits, like tournament or not, like that's just a fun, that's a fun way to catch a fish. But there too, that can be a little bit nuancey. We're talking, you know, that, that cold, clear water has actually been like one of the topics that, that I've had so many people write in about. Like those are just conditions that are just happening everywhere in walleye country right now. You know, for it's springtime, so it's like cold water. A lot of places didn't have a big runoff. You know, that plays a factor. Zebra mussels is, are such a widespread thing too, where it's just clear water is just becoming so normal everywhere. You know, but figuring that stuff out, I'm curious about like your setup and just sort of like, you know, your cadence on that. Was there any sort of details to that as far as fishing it, fishing the jerkbait, you know, the long pauses, you know, things like that, like that were just like some teachable topics that that would be fun to hear about?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, first off, my setup, I probably would have been made fun of big time by like any kind of bass guys or anyone, because I was not expecting to throw jerkbait. So I was just grabbing whatever I had. And luckily, I actually did have a jerkbait rod in there, a casting setup, and I was able to use that. So, but when that wind actually kicked up on the second day, I'm not good enough to cast with a bait caster. So I just grabbed whatever spinning rod I had in there and used that just to get the bait cast out as far as possible. But as for cadence, so with the Maverick, it's actually a sinking jerkbait, which was a huge key to it, and the deep dive. Because I was fishing pretty much right around 14 foot. And that's mm-hmm. that's pretty deep to get a jerk bait. Yeah. So,
oh, for sure.
I mean, you had to get a long cast out there. Basically, I get it down as deep as I could. You kind of like 7 or 8 feet. You really want them fish to actually come up for it. You don't want to be down in them. You want to get them fish's attention so they'll actually come up off the bottom and start chasing it. Now, if them fish started going after it, basically, I'd just start working it just like a jerk bait, taking it away from them. If they'd come up and just look at it, it was pretty much just a twitch, pause, and just wait for them to come back up to it. They'd start nosing up to it, twitch, pause. And I would have to do that all the way to the boat. And I mean, probably about 80% of them wouldn't take it. Like this, it was very difficult. But it was just one of them things where I just kept making casts. And day two of that event, I went back to one spot 3 different times and I just get the whole school to rise up and they would not take it. And I just kept going back and it was like 12 o'clock at this point and went back for the third time and ended up, I only had 2 fish in the box. So that whole school rose up and they just attacked it. And we got 4 fish, like boom, 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 like within 10 minutes. And it was just game on. And that was kind of one of them deals where cadence, everything was still the same. It was just like them fish turned on and they wanted to eat. And I mean, they just went crazy for it at that point. But it was one of the deals like where cadence, I don't know if I could have did anything a little bit better. But the biggest key to it all, though, was, I mean, really watching the fish and what they wanted. For me, now the co-angler, he was in the back. Blind casting, obviously, that works very well, too. And he was doing the same thing. He was basically just getting it down to depth and then just start working it just like a jerkbait. Rip, pause. And the pauses were, I mean, 5 seconds. They were longer pauses. And I think the longer the pause, the better for you, especially when that water's colder.
Were you mixing anything else in, or did you get to the point there on that last day of pre-fish that you were just going to exclusively, that was just a jerkbait in hand for the whole tournament?
So honestly, no, because I only caught a couple fish with the jerkbait, and it honestly really wasn't even on my radar going into the tournament. Like I had it rigged up, ready to go, like just in case we did have to. But kind of my gig was just throwing the same thing you hear me say all the time, and it's just a 3/8 ounce Moon-Eye jig and a 4-inch center jerk shads. It's, yeah, that's dude. What I went into the day, like that's what I'm going to do, and that's what I did for the first half of the day one, and we caught a couple nice fish, and definitely caught our biggest fish that way too. But about halfway through the day, that bite just got tough, and I'm like, hey, I'm gonna try the jerk bait. These fish have been beat up already. They've seen pretty much all the live bait you could throw at them, and I'm like, I'm just gonna try this out. And day one, it was just like game on. They were schools would rise up and just start attacking. I'm like, all right, this is probably what I'm gonna do for day two. And day two, I still went into it just right off the bat, kind of sticking to my guns with the Senate jerk shads, and did that for a little while. We caught an over, which is like a unicorn there for sure. I mean, it was 21, but there was not even a chance I was throwing that back, like
Yeah.
not even a thought. And I mean, went did that, and then it was pretty much just jerk baits the rest of the time.
Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. I like the point that you've made a couple times there, that you realize that you were throwing at some stale fish or just some, you're in some community spots. And so often with tournament fishing, especially when you talk about how people won tournament or top 10 or just, fishing well, you gain confidence when you find your own fish, or maybe you find some fish that you feel like you're going to be by yourself. Like, I'm curious about sort of your confidence, or just how often do you purposely go check community spots and just see if you can create a wrinkle like that? Because, it sounds like you're obviously very aware that you were casting at fish that had been seeing lures, but predictably they were seeing a lot of jigs and minnows, jig and bait, paddle tails or whatever. And then it's like that. So that jerk bait deal probably had to feel like a little bit of a wrinkle that maybe other guys weren't doing. I'm sort of curious about, just sort of the big picture of that in tournament fishing. Like, guys usually get a lot of their confidence when they find their own fish. But when you go into a tournament, like, did you even have a clue that you were going to have a chance at a solid finish if, a certain percentage of your spots were going to be community spots?
Going into that tournament, I didn't know if I was going to be in last place or first place. I honestly, I thought I had a chance at winning it, but I also thought, there's a chance I might bomb this one. And, and that's kind of one of the deals, because I am not a community spot fisherman, at all. Like, I get such bad anxiety if I'm even fishing around one person. And it's just, I don't fish well. My head is not well when I'm around other people. For this one, I just had to get over it and just, that's just where the fish were. That's just the spots the fish were in. And I mean, everyone knew it. I mean, they were all community spots, and that's just where the fish were. So I just had to get in there and go do it. And yeah, I mean, your mentality definitely changes. Mine does anyways. When you're fishing a community spot, it's like, what can I do different to catch these fish?
Yeah.
Now the river versus somewhere like Lake Erie, it's two completely different things. Like Lake Erie, I don't care at all. Like, I have a lot of confidence going into an area that has a lot of boats. Like, I just have a lot of confidence in myself that I can find the bigger fish, pitch to them bigger fish, and get them bigger fish to go, even if they've seen 100 different crankbaits go by them. I just have a lot of confidence in situations like that. My confidence kind of lacks in places like Sharp, where if my bite was a jig and a minnow, like my confidence would have been pretty much zero, because there's just, that's what everyone's doing. So it's like, what am I doing so much different than that they're doing? So when you can find something different, like throwing a jerk bait where no one else was doing. So, I mean, them fish really did not see any of that. But I did kind of find out there was one other guy that may have been throwing mavericks at that, and I was pretty surprised. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, but when you get like 100 of the best tournament anglers together, it's, you know, you're bound to find somebody else that's being sneaky too.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, no, I like that. I like you kind of addressing that topic a little bit too, because yeah, like so often with tournament fishing, somebody that doesn't fish tournaments, if I were to just imagine myself fishing like a high stakes tournament and actually like trying to perform, like legitimately trying to put my big boy pants on and do something, I would just spend 100% of my time with the lack of experience that I do have. But like, if I was going to get a sliver of confidence that I could do good against competition, it would have to be finding my own fish somewhere. I would have to find a waypoint that I could just rely on or just put all my, you know, efforts into. And I would just, yeah, I would just be so, you talk about the anxiety. If there was a boat 100 yards from me, I would just be, you know, the anxiety would be crippling for somebody like me. But I think that that's an interesting topic for somebody like you, because that's a huge away game. I mean, you're a long ways away from home on a body of water that, you know, it's definitely thrown you some curveballs. You didn't have a lights out pre-fish, which that's another topic with, you know, like the NWT or any of the like top end tournaments. It's actually kind of seems like it's kind of a common thing where not always does a good pre-fish equal a good tournament, and vice versa. A bad pre-fish doesn't always mean a bad tournament. It's like, it's amazing how some of you guys can just make those adjustments. But I like sort of addressing that topic a little bit. Anything else about Lake Sharp that you thought was cool or interesting? You know, something that you sort of learned or gained some confidence in that maybe you'd be able to keep that going into the Mississippi?
I mean, probably just the biggest takeaway was just finding a different technique that everyone else was doing, even in them community spots. So it's kind of the biggest takeaway from that event. And probably the other thing was just kind of keeping the head in the game. That was a tough pre-fish for everyone. And I'm really glad I kind of switched gears towards the end there. And it made a huge difference for sure, because bite down south wasn't happening. So it was good for me to get out of the mindset I was in for that tournament and just kind of go out and do what you had to do, really.
The Mississippi River, that's still ahead of us. I mean, you know, not, you know, to dig into anything, to tip a hand or anything like that, but what do you feel like your mindset is there? Like, what are some of the, you know, some of the more obvious conditions and things like that that you're seeing or hearing about out there?
Yeah, I mean, the Mississippi River is like my favorite place to go, and a lot of it is just because you can kind of almost put away the electronics a little bit for this one. Not 100%, because there are certain places like it works really good, but what you're going to see here a lot is wing dams, like cuts, a lot of willow cats, casting cranks, trolling lead core. You're going to see a lot of different techniques here, and I think that's why I love it so much. I mean, I just love the Mississippi River. I love reading current. I love everything about rivers, so this one's going to be pretty fun for me. I am seeing that it is a lot lower than I was expecting it to be, which is good. But at the same time, that means I'm probably going to get stuck a lot more and try to get in places that I shouldn't go. Yeah. And yeah, it's there's a lot of backwater that's out of play for how low it is, which is okay. That's perfectly fine. Just got to make some adjustments. But overall, though, I mean, I'm pretty excited for this one.
So I imagine you're going to start off with some scented jerk shads then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that, and I mean, I got to get the willow cats out too. They're pretty fun. Got to get the DTs out. They're fun. Like, they're just, it's a cool bite, like all of them. Like the Willow Cat is a really neat bite. It's definitely not one that I've perfected by any means, but it is such a cool bite to feel that big giant thunk. And I don't know, everyone says let them go for like 20 seconds, but I give them about three and then I get too excited and set the hooks.
Hammer down. Yeah, dude, you know, and that's the, you know, you're kind of alluding to it already there with some of those river tournaments. Like, you know, it's not uncommon, you know, even still in this day and age when we talk about the electronics and just and all this stuff, it's still a place where, like, in the top 10 of the tournament, there could be like eight different, you know, like totally different patterns and or just like presentations that are represented, right? And sometimes I like talking about that a little bit in the context of like the variety of spots that a place like the, you know, the Mississippi River or that stretch of the Mississippi River will present, where the, you know, there can be a lot of really small spots, right? You hear about Mississippi River tournaments in the past where guys just, you know, they'll go, you know, tie up to a tree and on a current break and they'll just do the Willow Cat deal in one spot all day. They don't burn any gas. And, you know, and then the whole, you know, the cranking deal, where there's like big spots and stuff. Like for you going into this pre-fish, you know, you and your travel partners, like, is it important for you guys to try everything, and look at all those spots like really objectively, or like where in the process do you feel like it's important to start narrowing things down, or not at all? Are you prepared to do four or five different big changes during the tournament? I'm just sort of curious, you know, sort of how you approach that, you know, in bodies of water like this, or specifically, you know, using Mississippi River as an example, like, you know, the spots are just so diverse for you.
Yeah, they really are. And I mean, you do have to try everything and pretty much try everything all the way down right to the end. I mean, usually it's kind of like the last day or the half day that we kind of really start to narrow stuff down. But honestly, anymore, I really don't even, whenever I find like anything good, I don't even really go back to it anymore. I almost leave it for tournament day to figure out, just for the fact that you don't burn fish. And tournament day with forward facing sonar now and just like how fast you fish areas, it doesn't come in so much play on the Mississippi River, but like tournament day, you can break down so much water. Like just like how many guys during the pre-fish said, oh man, if I would have had this weight, I would have won. And that's kind of like almost what I do anymore, just go into pre-fish mode on tournament day and just take like the biggest takeaways, the biggest keys throughout the whole pre-fish, kind of keep them all in my head and just kind of start utilizing throughout the tournament. And if I do have to make big adjustments tournament day, then I will. Like at Lake Sharp, not to beat a dead horse, but Lake Sharp, I day one of the tournament, I actually went back to trolling lead core.
Oh boy.
Just because the bite was so much different than what it was in pre-fish. So throughout the lead core, and I ended up catching two keepers like right away. Like that was definitely a big key to that tournament for sure. But at the same time, it was like, I wasn't afraid to jump into that and then just jump right back into the jerkbait thing and go do that again. It was like kind of one of them deals where you just had to make a big change to make things happen. So definitely don't be afraid to make big changes tournament day and during the pre-fish.
You don't even have a kicker on your boat though, do you?
No.
So, I mean, trolling, you know, bow mounts have really come a long ways, man. What the heck is your lead core trolling look like? I suppose on a river you maybe got some, you can go with the current, but you know, these trolling motors are a big deal, but man.
Yeah, I gotta give it up to the Garmin Kraken for sure. And I mean, yeah, running lithium batteries, like I got Dakota Lithium 3100 amperes for 36 volts, and I had that thing on I think 18 the whole time that I did it. I mean, I didn't troll super long, but that current was ripping. I mean, I was only going 0.3 to 0.5 into the current and I was almost maxed out. So I did it for maybe an hour. It was maybe an hour. I pulled lead for that one, but
it was, yeah, key.
You, Yeah, for sure. You got to have a good trolling motor and good batteries to do it. And honestly, that was kind of also a big factor for me when I got rid of my kicker, is like I have such good batteries and a good trolling motor. Like I can troll if I absolutely have to.
Yeah, and sometimes you just got to get it out of your head too, right? Like I could imagine that just in my own self. Sometimes when I'm just out fishing and maybe I'm having a tough day, like if I got something on my mind, I just got to go do it for an hour, even if it's bogus, just to like get it out of my head. You know, I can only imagine, you know, for you being able to just make that decision and do it for an hour or two, you actually capitalized on it. But even if you hadn't, sometimes you just got to do it just to.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would have been like, man, should I have made a poll? Or like, just, it's honestly better to just do it half the time because it doesn't take that long, and then it's not on your mind. You don't have that what if mentality.
Yeah, you can't have that. Boy, I have that a lot. But right on, man. Well, you know, even you know, we're kind of talking about these tournaments, but have you been doing any fun fishing or anything like that? I am always interested because you're from over east. I don't ever, you know, talk to anybody else really that does any of that stuff, and I thought it was really cool getting to know you, talking about the little reservoirs that you grew up on. But you got a new addition to the family now, and so you're kind of busy, responsible at home. Do you get any fun fishing in, you know, as far as like, you know, the practice grounds, or just kind of keeping your spear sharp, so to speak? Is there any good fun fishing happening?
You know, the fun fishing I get to do now is pretty much just the tournaments on the weekend for the local circuits with my dad, and that's kind of that's the fun fishing I get to do now, which is tournament fishing still, but it's fun to just go to Kinzu with him and just kind of go lay the smackdown on some walleyes. I mean, it's just one of my favorite things to do. Like, I don't know. It's kind of weird anymore because I feel like I can't go fun fishing. Like, if I go fun fishing, as soon as that trolling motor goes in the water, I am in the straight hunt mode. It does not matter. Like, I can't shut it off. So there's no more fun fishing for me. So it's just straight up hunt mode. And yeah, it's basically tournament mode anytime my boat hits the water. So even if my girlfriend gets in the boat with me, it's like, as soon as the bow mount goes in, it's like I don't even talk to her anymore. It's not enjoyable. So yeah, I just stick to the tournaments now.
Well, I always want to fit in a little bit more gear talk, and I know, you know, your bread and butter. You talk about kind of your bread and butter, your utility, your Swiss Army knife, there with the jig and the split tail. Maybe we'll kind of dig into that, your setup a little bit. Maybe that'll be a good closer. What are some of the gear that you're running this year that you're excited about? You know, your rods, your reels, your line. You know, your leader material, all those little details, man. I always like hearing about that stuff. You know, any of the fun stuff, any of the fun gear talk for you that you feel like is kind of your favorite.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my setup is kind of like, I feel like so dialed for myself. Like, I just have pretty much every rod the same anymore. And my go-to rod is a 6'8" Cass King Power Jig rod. It's a wide-eye rod. But the 6'8" with a 2000 series spinning reel, and I use a 2000 series, it's a Zephyr. It's honestly one of the. It's priced pretty decent. It's a $50 reel, and that's like my favorite reel ever. I just have all of them that set up. I like keeping everything the same. So whenever I grab the rod, I'm used to it. So I know my distances. Like I'm just comfortable with it. For line, pretty much the same on everything too. It's 10-pound Suffix 832, super line, and then basically go to a 10-foot fluorocarbon leader. Suffix Advanced Fluorocarbon, mostly 10-pound. That's pretty much all I use anymore, unless I'm on like the Great Lakes or something. I might go up to a 12-pound, but half the time, even out there, like Erie this spring, I used only 10-pound. It's just, I don't know what I'm comfortable with. I use light drag. I play the fish out, and it's just pretty much my setup that I really like to do, and it's perfect for a 3/8 ounce jig. And if I want to switch up to quarter ounce, half ounce, I can do that also. It's just what I'm comfortable with. I'm dialed with it. I just know when I cast that rod, I know I can hit 40 feet. I know I can hit 60 feet. And that's just what you need. I don't like having any thought process into, do I need to grab this rod? Do I need to grab this rod? Pretty much all my rods are the exact same setup.
Yeah, I think that's definitely becoming more and more popular, even just with the everyday angler, because those are the things that definitely can bind you up for a day when you just have to haul a semi-load of tackle boxes everywhere, and then you just feel the need to use everything you got. Man, a guy can just waste so much thought process.
Yes, for sure.
So you mentioned the Erie. I actually forgot. You started the season off up there, right? A bunch of guys did.
Yeah, yep. MWC and an LAWT. They were a joint tournament.
That was a good bite for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a really cool tournament. It's a great way to start out the season. Lake Erie is an awesome place to go to kind of knock off the rust of not being out fishing for the whole winter. It's the perfect place to go get dialed in with everything. Like, it was just a lot of fun. There was a lot of fish, 26 to 27 inches. Like, that year class is growing up, and it's going to be insane in probably another couple of years of how big them fish are going to be.
One topic, it's something that I think a lot about just because I've been trying to stack some skills with forward sonar just in my own way here. Casting at fish away from the boat, not spooking them with the boat in different conditions. Like, it's not really like a debate or anything like that, but it's also like everybody tends to have a little bit different opinions on like, how proficient do you got to be at casting certain distances before you're kind of toting that line where you might be making fish nervous or you might be losing bites just because you're getting a little bit too close to them?
Honestly, it does come down to the body of water you're fishing or the mood of the fish. 100%. You got to kind of figure out what the fish will give you. I like to get close to the fish as I can. I mean, like 40 feet is my comfort zone. Like if I can get the fish at 40 feet, I mean, that's just like my favorite area to cast for them. Now, some lakes you can get right over top of them and they do not care. And other ones you have to have it set out at 100 feet and try to make that cast. Like I know Green Bay that was last year. I had to have it set out at 100 feet. And as soon as they would come in, I mean, you would have to try to cast a death jig 100 feet. And that is way harder than you would think. And you could not get within 60 feet of them fish or it was game over, at least for me. Like, so it is so dependent on the body of water.
I mean, do you ever make changes to your setup for that cast ability? Do you ever, change to maybe a smaller diameter line or a longer rod? Or like, are there any little tweaks with any of that that you feel like have ever given you any kind of an advantage? Or are you still that, that 6'8" guy?
Honestly, it's still that 6'8" guy. Like, that's just kind of like what I'm comfortable with. If I have to cast that far, like I have a real good idea of what I got to do to get out to that far and still hit like my distances. Like if when I grab like a 7'1", because I do use 7'1s for like light tackle. And when I grab that thing and start casting, it's like, holy man, I got to actually relearn how to hit my distances. And it's only, I mean, just a little bit longer. So, I mean, what's only 5 inches longer, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, those are just sort of some of those fun talkers for, us mere mortals that are just, learning the stuff. And that explains a lot of tough bites sometimes, too, when you just got to roll over a spot first just to mark fish. Well, you might be doing yourself a favor if you don't have forward sonar, just park off of them and make a couple casts.
Yeah. Know. For sure. And a lot of times, if you don't have the forward-facing sonar, you got to really pay attention to the clues then, because it's the little things. Like if you made a longer cast and you caught a fish that time, like, all right, you should probably try making a longer cast again and seeing if maybe that fish did bite out at 80, 100 feet. Like that could be the ticket 100%. Like Green Bay is a really good example of that. Like whenever you get a fish to bite out there, like, a lot of the times it's on like the first few rips, and that's because you're in crystal clear water and them fish just spook so easily. So you have to make them super far cast. So you just really got to pay attention to them. Little clues, like if the bite is bad, just kind of look at that like, hey, was that cast farther? Maybe I should do that again. So just little things like that.
Yeah. And even if you're on a good spot and you can do all that, sometimes two fish off a spot is all you can even ask for. Even if it's your best spot of the day, you know, if you get two, realistically, you got to think that, you know, from an efficiency standpoint, if you don't catch one in the next 15 or 20 minutes, you might have spooked those fish just catching those two.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's where having more spots kind of comes into play. I think there's just a lot of those sort of concepts, even if you're fun fishing, that's like, doesn't even have to be tournament related, but we learn so much from you tournament guys, but it's like, those are definitely takeaways. I feel like, to any everyday angler, fishing a small home body of water, it's like, man, definitely try to find more spots and fish more spots in a day and just sort of implement some of those things. I think those are just great topics, man. I love talking about it.
Absolutely.
I don't really have any other questions for you. I just wanted to get those updates on the tournaments and just sort of the cool things happening in your boat right now. So I don't know, man, if there's anything you want to talk about or promote or anything else that's cool going on or any other stories that you want to tell, you can go ahead. Otherwise, I don't know. We can close this out.
Oh man, I don't even have anything cool for you on the top of my head.
We've covered a lot of cool stuff already, so.
I know. Maybe at this tournament, I could send you some cool pictures of me probably getting stuck in the back channels. I know the last tournament, I had the boat beached on a sandbar and had to get out and push in 38 degree water temps. And other than that, I did get a power pole stuck in the tree while I was there also. That was cool. And other than that, no, just that's about all I got.
You gotta get, is anybody ever, I don't even know what the rules are for the NWT, but does anybody ever just like bring a little jet boat when they get on a cool bite like that? Is that ever like
I would love to. I honestly don't think you can. I think it has to be propeller driven for the NWT.
Okay.
But I want a jet boat in the worst way. And one day I'm going to have one. I don't even know where I'm going to take it, but I want one really bad.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I feel like that would be a super hilarious wrinkle, or even just a smaller boat. Like if somebody just had like a, I could just see times like that, like on the Mississippi, of course a smaller boat, a smaller gas tank, there's probably some logistics you'd have to figure out, but like if you didn't have a super long run but there was some water, some productive water that you could get into with a smaller boat, that like you could just eliminate 99% of the field, like doing something like that, man, you'd probably see it more often already. So I'm not
I'd be all for it.
Yeah. I'm not speaking any brand new ideas. I'm sure those ideas have already been gone through, but that, I think that'd be hilarious to see.
Oh, I would run a bass boat. Like I want a Z20 in the worst way. And if we didn't go to so many Great Lakes, I would have 100%.
Yeah.
But I run mine like a bass boat though. So just fingers crossed, no rocks, no stumps, we'll be good.
Yeah, dude, if you feel like you know how far you are, you know, and you just leave that gas tank maybe like 3/4 empty and empty out all the compartments, you might be able to lighten that sucker up just a bit.
Yes, exactly.
Get that sucker in there, man. Oh, gosh. You got to have your co-angler get his cell phone out and take videos of that if you could ever accomplish that. It'd just be, that'd be so freaking cool, man, to see somebody just, I mean, I don't know. There's stories like that that go on in history, you know, even back in the day, how greasy people were, you know, getting back into spots. That's been like a fun, like sort of like a tournament lore since the beginning of time. But, and I feel like that stuff is still a thing, you know, like guys are still thinking that way. I just love it. But
oh yeah, it's fun. It's fun stuff.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, we can close this out, dude. Just, you know, if anybody wants to follow along on your stuff, talking about maybe your socials or if there's any content or any sponsors that you want to promote, anything that you want to throw out there, man, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you follow me on Facebook. That's kind of the biggest platform I go on, at Dylan Nussbaum Fishing, Instagram, YouTube, all of that. And as for like the sponsors and stuff, I can't thank all of them enough. Like, there's kind of too many to run through here, but like, I can't thank them guys enough, because if you see anyone like on my jersey, like if you guys can support them in any way possible, like that just helps me and helps them support me do this, do what I love. I mean, it's a dream come true to have companies like that. It is, I basically just work with the companies that it's just stuff I use. And if I don't have a sponsor with stuff I don't use, then I still use it because it's just, I use what I believe in and I promote what I believe in. So if you could support them in any way, it supports me. So I can't thank them enough. And yeah, other than that, I can't thank you enough for having me on.
Yeah, man. Well, anytime you got something cool going on, just hit me up. I'll have you anytime, but I'll definitely be tracking you down, you know, maybe throughout the season or whenever I see your name popping up a little bit.